Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins, and as always, Chris Logie. It's kind of a light crowd today, but we certainly aren't short on topics, because holy shit, a lot of stuff went down this week, didn't it?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Goddamn, where do we start? So, we had, after the shit that went down in Atlanta last week, when this one, like, hyper-evangelical douchebag decided to go on a killing spree and murdered, I think it was, how many was it, like 9 people? Most of whom were Asian women who were working for Gold Spa, which is a, you know, one of those Asian-style massage parlors. One of whom we now know was a single mother. And you think, you know, that's bad enough, and it started this whole thing where, you know, now people are getting, getting awareness of, you know, anti-Asian racism and prejudice. But then we had another fucking mass shooting, this time happening in Boulder. In,
Yep.
Was it, is it Colorado or California?
Colorado.
Colorado, okay. I was thinking, there isn't a Boulder in California. Yeah, and this guy, we'll get to it. But once again, any of you who have ever paid any attention to American news and how this shit goes, there's a cycle that happens here. Somebody goes out and gets the mass murder clusterfuck achievement, all right? That starts the circle. People get pissed off, justifiably, rightfully so. You know, how did this fucker get a hold of this gun? Did he go through clearance? Did he buy it illegally? You know, was it like an assault-style weapon? Then the Republicans come out and say, you know, no, this is a tragedy. You know, this is a time for healing. Now is not the time for, you know, talking about gun control. And then I respond, fuck you, this is exactly the time to start talking about gun control. And then the cycle continues, and then people lose interest, and then it starts all over again.
Yep.
And frankly, I'm fucking tired of it. Tired of having the same goddamn cycle happen every goddamn time. But obviously, that's not the only shit that went down this week. We do have some heroes of the week we'll be talking about. And speaking of gun control, our current president is actually thinking of kickstarting the whole thing himself, and we'll talk about how he plans on doing that. We got some more COVID vaccine news. I think even though it's probably nowhere near the truth, we Americans have kind of sort of accepted the idea that we're finally at the light at the end of the tunnel, even though, yes, thanks to vaccinations, there's not nearly as many deaths as there was when it was at its peak, but there's still 1,000 people a day dying from this shit. Oh, yeah, and a certain creator of voter registration and voting software just slapped Fox News with a $1 billion lawsuit. Some dipshit got his container ship stuck in the Suez Canal. And if you're wondering, how did it happen? Well, you're going to find out. We, of course, have more news on the fact that collegiate sports are sexist as fucking hell, especially against women. And we got a bunch of new movie and entertainment news to talk about. But, obviously we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, Chris, start us off. What have you been doing this week?
The weather has been all right around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of rain stuff, but nothing really big deal about it. Though today's all morning was a kind of a big windstorm of sorts, mm-hmm. enough that I could hear it as I was in the bathroom early in the morning. Kind of stuff. Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, I could hear it just slamming the walls pretty hard.
Yeah,
which is,
you live in like a suburb or in like a more urban area?
More suburb.
Okay.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the thing, the weird thing about the way those places are laid out is that they can kind of act like a wind tunnel sometimes. I know, especially where I live, the way our house and our driveway is made, that there, if it gets a little windy, it suddenly sounds like there's a fucking hurricane coming through. But yeah, windstorms and shit, those are notorious for March.
Yep. But yeah, I at least had some good news today as I managed to procure a vaccine appointment for Monday.
Good.
Got the earliest appointment I could get, which is like 10:45, something like that.
All right. Have you found out which vaccine it is?
No, it's a 2-dose, so.
All right.
One of a couple there, so I'll probably ask when I actually get there.
All right.
Which one it is, but yeah, I got it set up for Monday morning. I'm off, so don't have to worry about calling off work or anything, but the one for next month is actually a month from today, so that'll be interesting to see if that clashes with anything, but right now it seems like it should be okay. But yeah, that's at the local Walgreens. None of the places I signed up for.
Yeah.
So that's not great, like I was hoping, but you know, at least I got something there.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is they want me to fill out some fucking form ahead of time.
Yeah. Just
for potential like allergy stuff and all that. And I'm like, just fucking put it in me. As long as you ain't injecting the shitty stuff.
Yeah.
Into me.
Yeah. So just so you know, because I've been talking to folks who've gotten the vaccine. There aren't any really serious side effects, but you will be experiencing some muscle aches in the arm they put it into, and you'll probably be feeling like you might have a cold for the next day or so. So, you know, plan accordingly.
Yeah, sure. But, yeah. So, yeah, that has been kind of the big thing. I've been streaming some more Ratchet & Clank. I actually just finished it earlier today. Dealing with that fucking kind of low blow of a boss fight there at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game kind of has a lot of not great checkpointing to it.
No, it doesn't.
There's plenty of areas where I was like, you know, if I was doing this now, I would have put a checkpoint like here, like halfway through this area, instead of like getting to, you know, maybe 75 or 80% of the way through, dying and getting sent all the way back to the fucking beginning and being like, this is a huge, you know, mood killer, I guess.
Yeah.
Boss fight definitely is a mood killer, as well as the areas preceding it. It's the only level in the game that I think is just linear. No, like, forks in it. So you don't have to worry about, which of these paths is the one that actually progresses and which is the other one that goes off to a side thing. And all that. So I was going to try and finish it on Wednesday when I was streaming, but ran into, I guess, called Old Tanis, which is a very kind of dark and stormy area that Clank cannot go in, as they have a cutscene showing him getting struck by lightning. It's like, okay, you sit this one out, so you have less of your moveset, at least for the platforming stuff. And this was an area where I died a number of times both ways, and it's the one that has this like weird security bot that is like patrolling these different areas. And if you set them off, the turrets come after them, which the Glove of Doom, the little robots that'll go seek out enemies, will take care of them pretty easily. But the end of that area has you using the, what is it called? The swing shot. To get on these different moving platforms. And one of them, I got it, and it just dropped me where the platform used to be. I fell to my doom and I had to start all the way at the beginning. I was like, oh my God. That was like an hour for just to get through the different parts. And I even missed a part of the stage because it was a magnets path that I just completely fit in with the rest of the level. Just easy to miss, which didn't really give me anything in the end. You just meet Quark and he gives you this like way to buy ammo for an increased cost when you're not around a merchant box.
Yeah.
Well, kind of these last good bit of levels are the ones that are the most kind of shitty about checkpoints and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And yeah, that's not a very fun part of it, but managed to beat the final boss fight after like six attempts, something like that, which is good because I was basically at the point where it was like, all right, I got to get ready for the show. We got to finish this, and I don't want to have to start this over again. Before starting going commando and managed to get it, which was good because I was about to lose my mind. But that was like a 3-hour session going through all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll be starting going commando tomorrow to a much better game. better camera and all that. Because, yeah, that camera in the original game is kind of very swimmy.
Oh,
especially when you're controlling it. Because they do kind of give you a strafe option, but it's using the hover pack you have. So it's not the greatest control way.
Yeah.
But that became very useful in the boss fight because when he's chasing after you, that thing is just fast enough to get out of its range. So if you just get into that mode and kind of keep going away, you're going to be okay. So I was happy to get that done. Can I get past like the hardest of these games because it's more rough. Than the rest of them. But yeah, that's done with. I also ended up watching the movie because I was like, you know what, I should have already owned this, but hadn't. Yeah. So I got it off of Google Play.
Yeah.
Used some of my Google Play credit from their survey stuff and got it for about $10. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I can definitely see where the game, the remade game kind of weaves in and out because in the movie, Clank just basically seems like he just walks out of the factory. Like he just runs and nobody bothers chasing him. But obviously in the game that you have a whole sequence, dodging enemies and all that kind of stuff as you're running out. And there's a number of sequences like that where it's like, oh yeah, that's where that part of the game was. That's where you did a thing. And so like it's kind of weirdly complimentary to the game, but also the game kind of detracts from it a little bit because there are just elements of it that aren't present because it's in the game. That kind of stuff, but still pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, I've been watching the new the Falcon and Winter Soldier show that's on Disney Plus. Two episodes are out now. It's been pretty good. Kind of like WandaVision, it's dealing with the fallout of Endgame and the people coming back to life from the blip, that kind of thing. And this one's more about the kind of the political and societal upheaval that caused, not only people disappearing, but how it changed things when those people came back. And so, yeah, it's kind of just dealing with those two characters, as well as their kind of link with Captain America now that he's no longer around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty solid show so far. Also been watching more Venture Brothers. I'm in season two now, which has like an interesting way to end that first season where it's this whole bit of the Venture Brothers kind of getting killed, which is a very dramatic thing to do, killing off the two to the main characters of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that whole thing, like, well, what the fuck are they going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they going to evolve? This show is called The Venture Brothers, and the Venture Brothers no longer are alive. And you go back and find out, oh yeah, no, Rusty just has clones of them constantly ready in case they die because they're stupid kids and they get prone to dying throughout the various adventures the family's on.
Yep.
Which they kind of make fun of because they just recap a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, lots of good stuff. This is where they start putting more story and lore into the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
As they, you know, introduce, like, oh, the notion that, you know, a lot of these villains and Brock and Rusty kind of know each other for many years, having been in, you know, college together and all that kind of stuff. Which I think is one of the things that kind of really gives it an edge, at least at the time. And I think that set it apart from most other shows out there.
Mm-hmm.
In the era of, you know, Family Guy and all that, where they're just kind of all one-off episodes for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But, yeah, still a lot of fun. Still using the R word a lot. Mm-hmm. Here. I would just not create the subtitles. At least put it as like R apostrophe D to not show it entirely. So that's nice there. Yeah, that's been nice. And as for games, been playing some Subnautica since that is on the play at home list. It was a game I've been wanting to check out some more of. The interesting thing is they have like a console in the game, as in like a place to enter in codes for like a dev console thing that if you're playing on PS5, I think the Xbox Series X version as well has the same thing where you can enable 60 FPS mode in the game. If you want a higher frame rate while you're waiting for, you know, the next gen versions to get finished, that's the thing you can do. It might disable trophies, I'm not sure. I don't think the achievements or trophies for that game are super easy to them. But also the artwork they show for that game kind of spoils one of the late enemies or whatever in the game. This like weird underwater giant spider thing. It's like, oh, that's unsettling, and I didn't really want that to be spoiled, but might also be good as like a content warning. If you're not super great with spiders, that maybe played up until that point. But yeah, it's been fun so far. I also got from one of the recent sales the Messenger, which is like if Cyber Shadow was made to be easier and more kind of generally pleasant.
Yeah.
Not to say that it never gets hard, but
it gets hard.
Yeah, but it definitely does not kick you in the nuts as often or as hard as Cyber Shadow does.
No.
But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I haven't gotten to the point where it kind of gets open yet, so I'm still working my way through it.
This isn't your first time playing it, is it? Because I think I remember you played before.
But I played the first couple hours a bunch
of times
because it's been on Game Pass and that kind of stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
So I know all the early stuff about the game.
Yeah.
It's just getting to the later stuff that's not been the easiest thing, but I'll give it a shot here again.
Yeah. The great thing about that game is it's really chill. It doesn't really punish you much for getting stuff wrong, really. Like, the worst it'll do is basically just, you know, send you back to the previous puzzle.
Yeah.
And that's it. And, you know, the thing is, the way those puzzles are laid out is, it is completely, you know, sensible to, if you get to a point in a section where you're like, God, I can't think this. I got to go refresh. You can just perfectly go to another section of the game and do the puzzles there. And usually during that point, you'll have some kind of epiphany where you'll suddenly realize that, you know, the solution had been staring you in the face the whole time. But yeah, definitely one of those games I highly recommend.
Yeah. It's a game that loves to play with people's nostalgia for stuff like Ninja Gaiden and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you get to the merchant, I guess. Mm-hmm. Who has like a whole gag where there's a closet. Fuck. You can go mess around with it.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the witness, not the messenger. God damn it. I got my head completely. Yeah, the messenger, the Ninja Gaiden like game. Yeah, which is also really good and very like self-referential and funny. Yeah, I got him confused, but yeah, Messenger is also a great game.
Yeah, where there's the closet, and he's like, "Hey, don't mess with that." And you keep doing. He's like, "I'm going to tell you a story. You're not going to like it. They're not going to let you skip through it. All that kind of stuff." And you obviously want to keep pushing it. To let him know who's boss, and he sure does it back at you. So that is a fun part of it. Also, it gives you lots of little stories and makes jokes about, you know, we're giving you this upgrade for free and not making you pay for it like the others, because obviously that's what games do, that kind of thing. There's some fun aspects to it like that. But yeah, also been playing this new sort of Picross game on the Switch called Hatsune Miku Logic Paint S, which, as far as I can tell, is made by the Hatsune Miku people, or at least some internal team in there. So it has like little chibi Hatsune Miku and the other characters. You can pick who you want to be the person that hops around on the screen when you're doing puzzles. As you solve puzzles, you get unlock more music that can be played, all that kind of stuff. The Picross action itself is pretty all right. It's not anything on par with the regular Picross games and the best stuff like that. But yeah, it's because it has some like weird control things. Like you can't lay down X's for where you know like a mark is not going to go. Which is kind of annoying because you kind of have to be very particular. So it's a game that doesn't have a lot of difficulty options to make it more challenging or more fair or whatever. So it's kind of a game you kind of have to play by its own rules, and its rules are kind of a bit more like the older Picross games on like the DS and Super Nintendo than the more modern ones that have a lot of different options to shape things how you want to play them. So yeah, still working on my way through it. And it does clash with my desire to just mute all of the audio in these kind of games, because I'm just playing it at night and I don't need any music or anything to mess with that. But I've so far kind of kept it mostly pretty low, because I don't need it blaring at me, especially when I can't really, you know, understand what they're saying most of the time anyway. So yeah, that's been it for me. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, so for me, my gaming for the past week has been Assassin's Creed Valhalla, because I went and traded in my Final Fantasy VII Remake copy after I'd finished it, and yeah, it's Assassin's Creed. You kind of know what you're in for already. Although I will say what I do like about this particular installment is some of the plot stuff they've done. So the basic sort of plot, at least at this point, is there's basically, obviously like with all Assassin's Creed games, there's two plot threads going. There's the plot that's happening inside the Animus, and there's the plot that's happening outside of the Animus. Inside the Animus, you're playing Eivor, who is a Viking, who a Norse, a Norseman, or in my case, a Norse woman, who was with a clan called the Raven Clan, who were at war against the Kyothve, who was a rival, head of a rival clan who was also an Oathbreaker, which, if you know anything about Viking culture, the one major taboo that they have is breaking an oath. Because, again, Viking culture didn't really have a, like, very succinct set of laws. Everything kind of worked on honor. And breaking an oath is, like, the worst thing you could possibly do. But eventually what happens is, after you get rid of Kjotve, you find out that Harald the Great, who's the current king of Norway, declares something called an Althing, which is when all the major clans send their leaders to a single meeting. And he then says that he's going to declare himself king of Norway, and he wants all of the other clans to unite underneath him so that, you know, there can finally be peace and bring an end to the sort of inter-clan murder and warfare and stuff. And this pisses off Eivor's stepbrother, Sigurd, who is the sort of heir apparent to his particular clan. And he decides that he's going to go off, and they're going to go to England, and they're going to start their new colony and start a new kingdom just for them. Then as for the stuff that's happening outside of the Animus, for those of you who haven't played the last couple of Assassin's Creed games, you're basically have been playing Layla, who is the main creator of the Animus technology. And she has defected from the Templars to the Assassins because she's trying to reverse and find a solution to this huge, like, almost apocalyptic event that basically happens where, after Assassin's Creed 3, the magnetic poles in the Earth actually end up shifting, which causes it very dangerous radiation to happen on the North and South Poles. There's a permanent aurora borealis in the sky. There's more random earthquakes. A bunch of satellites have started falling. North America has lost most of its GPS service. And then she ends up finding Eivor's grave site in North America. And I'm like, okay, so how did that go from here to there? That's, I guess, the plot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Good game. You know, it's an Assassin's Creed game. You know what you're getting with an Assassin's Creed game. And damn if the formula doesn't work when it's done well. So, and of course, I'm also still playing Splatoon 2 because that's a thing I'm doing now. I'm getting better at it. Books, still reading books. Nothing changed there. The pollen is now out in full force. So my neighborhood is now drowning in flower semen, which is just oh so wonderful. Everything is now a nice light shade of green. And it ends up flying around in little poofy clouds all over the place. And I got to make sure to not touch my face and, wash my hands frequently. And who am I kidding? COVID-19 has already equipped me pretty well for this shit. So come at me, motherfucker. All right. But that's what I've been doing. So what about you? You got anything else you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Uh-huh. All right. So then, with that, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And one of the things that started happening in the last couple of years is a sort of, people have sort of become aware of the fact that we, until fairly recently, and like fairly recently, I mean like literally within the last few months, have used a lot of like racial and ethnic stereotypes for advertising, haven't we? Like think of some of the most, here's some infamous examples. Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima was literally a mammy caricature. I mean, they tried to change the image up until recently when they finally decided to just drop the name altogether. but you can see like old school, you know, advertisements, and even up until fairly recently, it's pretty obvious what that's supposed to be. Then, of course, there's Uncle Ben, which is basically like Aunt Jemima's male counterpart. He's basically, because what people don't realize is back in the old plantation days, people used to refer to like the elderly slaves as aunts and uncles. That's where that shit comes from. And then, like, it's not even, you know, necessarily black people either. You know, remember the Native American woman on the Land O'Lakes boxes? She's not there anymore, but she used to be. So, you know, that's another example. But there used to be some really awful, like, super egregious examples. Like, so much so that even by the late 50s, people thought this shit was too much. I would like to introduce you to an American restaurant chain that used to exist right here in the United States. It was found in Salt Lake City, Utah. It was called, I am not making this up, the Coon Chicken Inn. Yes, if you ever saw that movie CSA, that mockumentary about what if the Confederates had won the Civil War, and you thought, surely that's a joke. No, no it isn't. It really used to exist. The Coon Chicken Inn was a fried chicken chain of restaurants. Again, it was started in Utah, and it basically used a really, like, super racist, like, caricature of an African-American porter. Like, big smiling, his teeth, you know, his skin is so dark it's almost, like, blue. And he's got that those gigantic, like, sausagey lips. And he's got, like, a porter's cap on, and literally everything that was, that revolved around this freaking institution is just, it's just awful. Look, I'm going to go ahead and put a, I'm not going to link to a direct image. I'm just going to put to a image list from Google down here so you can click and see for yourself. But yeah, so basically everything involving this awful image was put into this restaurant's brand. The door was literally just a giant version of this caricature's head, with a door going in between its teeth. The plates, the glasses, the napkins, the toothpicks, they all fucking, like, used that image as, like, a kind of, you know, as its branding. And oh, and if you think, oh God, that's awful in and of itself. It is, but it gets worse. You see, this was still the South, so as you can probably guess, these restaurants were all segregated. And as you can also guess, they were all almost exclusively for white people. And here's another thing. This particular restaurant, they specialized in whole fried chickens that would then be brought out on a plate for all of these racist white people by black waiters. Keep in mind, the black waiters were not allowed to work in the kitchen. They were exclusively to work as waiters to keep up the image. And yes, a lot of them had to wear the stupid little porter hat just to make it even worse. So yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, it's like, so yeah, literally, this was so bad that even by the 50s, it couldn't handle. The chain itself was finally closed for good in 1957. In fact, the very last location of where this thing was originally made, which is in Salt Lake City, is now a parking lot. And yeah, that's it. So that's the sort of little story of a restaurant with a gimmick that was so racist that even the 1950s couldn't fucking stand it. And that's yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Woo! Yes. Now then, with that, we now move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And we got a handful. And a couple of these stories, unfortunately, involve my state of Georgia, We'll be getting to that because we have to start up, of course, with the individual who went into Boulder, Colorado and killed 10 people during his little mass shooting.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It was at a King Soopers, S-O-O-P-E-R-S, a grocery store. Mm-hmm. Managed to kill 10 people with an AR-15. He was wearing like an armored vest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the only other person that got hurt in that whole thing was himself. Came out, at least when they're putting him in the car, like had nothing on but his underwear at that point. I don't know what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this basically happened so close to the Atlanta thing. I think the White House only had their flag at full mast for a few hours.
Yeah.
Well, they had to put it back down at half mast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the people was one of the cops responding to it as well.
Yeah. And so yeah, that happened. And again, like I said, the cycle, it started anew. Got to have a pair. And then this is where it gets especially infuriating when you find out. Because then, of course, the NRA comes into this and we find out there was a suit that was going forward 10 days before the shooting happened that was to block the sale of AR-15s. Rifles in Boulder, Colorado. But the NRA successfully won that, and that particular rule was overturned. And then 4 days later, the shooter here bought his AR-15.
Yep.
That he then used days later to start the shooting.
Yeah. And this was kind of a whole weird thing to see, because they had voted in Boulder to have this ban a couple years ago, and I think it's been challenged recently by the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
To which the trying to see where it says here about this. Yeah, I don't know, but basically that it was not, I don't know, constitutional or whatever, but. Shut it down and had this this dude being able to buy one, you know, a few days later and lead to this whole shit show.
And apparently he cleared the background check too.
Yeah.
Which, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now has there been any idea of like what did the shooter give a reason? Has he given any kind of reason?
I don't think they've been able to figure that out yet, so maybe just because he wanted to.
It's possible. I've been especially careful about this because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the identity of who the shooter is, that apparently he was originally from Syria or something like that. Now he's been here in the U.S. for like some 20 years or something, and some people said he was showing like signs of like paranoid schizophrenia or something like that. Something like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to get involved in any of that. That's all hearsay, as far as I know.
Well, at the very least, the police aren't, you know, just spewing whatever he said out without any sort of filter in place.
Like the fucker in my state did.
Yep.
Huh. Speaking of another asshole, Louis DeJoy, who's currently the Postmaster General, in spite of the fact that he should be behind fucking bars, he revealed his 10-year plan for the United States Postal Service this week, which, among other things, will involve longer delivery times and higher postal rates.
Yep. There's like a 10-year reorganization plan that has, let's see, yeah, a small percentage of post office would have their hours reduced. A small percentage of city stations could be closed. let's see, 70% of first-class mail will still be delivered in 2 or 3 days. 20% mm-hmm. of what she identified, what is identified as coast-to-coast mail, might not arrive for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, the let's see here. There was also, I forget what else was in this. I think it was those are the some of the main things. Like the rate for first-class mail is going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. You know, paying more money with. Like, the whole thing is the USPS is not supposed to be a business.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a service that delivers, you know, a great service for the cost of, you know, sending a letter or mailing a package mm-hmm. kind of thing compared to, you know, UPS or FedEx or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the Republicans don't like a business not operating to make money.
Mm-hmm. No,
so until we can get some seats replaced in the board by Biden's men, DeJoy is in there for the time being,
at least for the next year, anyway. But his clock is ticking, and that fucker will be gone eventually because he's very off.
Because there's so much other stuff to get done first.
All right. And now to the shit happening in my state. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp signed election overhaul bill to turn the blue tide in their favor, and he fucking signed it underneath the painting of a fucking plantation.
Yep. Yeah, so has
just signed the
on mail-in voting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's limits how many ballot boxes are available, all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. New ID requirements, moving back the request deadline, other changes like that. Yeah, you have to require an excuse to vote by mail instead of the sort of the no excuse stuff they had for this past election, mm-hmm. as well as restrict weekend voting hours that are used in largely Democratic leaning counties. And so. A lot of shit, but there are civil rights groups filing lawsuits already to challenge this stuff. So,
yeah,
hopefully that stuff gets heard and maybe ends up overturning this whole thing.
Yeah. Also, need to remind folks, especially my fellow Georgians, Governor Kemp is up for re-election next year. So you know what to do.
Yeah.
And, to make shit even worse, one of our state representatives, Ms. Park Cannon, was arrested for knocking on Kemp's door during the signing, and she's been charged with 2 felonies because of it.
Yeah. A great thing that definitely highlights a lot of the bullshit of this bill. Mm-hmm. That she was kind of there not to like cause a ruckus or anything, but wanted to be there for the signing as an observer, and they obviously were not going to allow this. Mm-hmm. Despite him having a handful of other people there
mm-hmm.
To the side of him as he signed this stupid bill into law.
Mm-hmm.
I think she got charged with, let's see where it's written in here, charge of obstructing law enforcement officers by use of threats or violence. Because I guess she stepped on their feet a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And also a second charge of disrupting General Assembly sessions or other meetings of members, which I would believe probably doesn't apply here because there was no General Assembly session here. Mm-hmm. It was the governor signing a bill and trying to restrict who can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably a decent to good chance that both of these get thrown out.
Mm.
Probably because of how much of a bad look it makes on the Kemp and the police's images that are already kind of stained a bit, but you know, they say she's 5'2", it's not a threat to really anybody.
Yeah.
You can probably guess what the color of her skin is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And finally, to bring it into the shithead roundup, everyone remember Sidney Powell? If you don't, and you've kind of banished her from your memory, well, I totally understand. But if you don't, she was the woman who teamed up with fucking Rudy Giuliani to try and overturn the 2020 election, claiming massive evidence of voter fraud. And, of course, there was no evidence she actually had. Well,
yep.
She's basically finally reaping the whirlwind of her actions. And in her defense from a defamation suit, she claims that, quote, reasonable people would not accept her statements and claims as facts.
Yeah, it's...
It's literally the Tucker Carlson defense.
Yeah, but she is a lawyer who filed a number of suits alleging that these things were facts, that these were actual evidence that could basically put her in jeopardy here, because this is the $1.3 billion defamation suit from Dominion that is going through. And yeah, she repeatedly pressed unfounded claims of voter fraud on the airwaves and in court, as now just saying that, you know, quote unquote, reasonable people would not accept her statements as quote unquote fact because the legal process hadn't played out yet. Which seems like also should be a thing that could be used to disbar her.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'd imagine they do not like when lawyers claim that they put up a bunch of lawsuits, knowing that they were, you know, fraudulent. The First Amendment provides strong protections for statements of opinion, but what Dominion is pointing to is the fact that Ms. Powell was declaring that she had evidence of this fraud and this election malfeasance, and she was declaring that as a matter of fact. The First Amendment doesn't protect knowingly false statements of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, her
her
defense from her lawyers doesn't seem to be going too well.
Mm.
Hopefully that results in her seeing the full consequences of her actions.
Yeah. Fucked around. Now she's finding out. But fortunately, it's not all bad. We do have a few heroes of the week to talk about. First and foremost, the governments of the United States, the United Kingdom, the European Union, and the Dominion of Canada have officially sanctioned Chinese official over abuses of the Uyghur peoples in Xinjiang.
Yeah.
Those who do not know what is essentially happening is basically a bunch of Uyghurs who are suspected of having militant Islamic sympathies are essentially being herded into what can basically be called Canadian-style residential schools in order to essentially brainwash the radical Islam out of them. And as I often have to remind people, this is basically kind of a problem of China's own making, because the reason all of this hardcore radical Islam became an issue in Xinjiang in the first place with the Uyghurs was because back in the 1980s, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, the Chinese, of course, being because they were opposed to the Soviet Union because, you know, the Sino-Soviet split, and also because they were cooperating with the American government, they decided to send a bunch of predominantly Uyghur Muslims to these various training camps that were being run in Saudi Arabia, where they ended up picking up Salafism, which they would then go to take over into Afghanistan to fight with the Mujahideen. And, of course, when they came back, they kept spreading this shit in Xinjiang. So, again, this is China basically shooting themselves in the foot again.
Yep. And yeah, the Chinese are very much trying to rebuff this stuff.
Yeah.
They're saying like, you don't want to be doing this. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they guess they're going to be retaliating with their own sanctions on EU individuals and four entities. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have brought attention to the things they've been doing from outside of China.
Yeah. And, yeah, and you know, I often come in contact with hardcore China stans online who are absolutely convinced that China can do no wrong and that everything bad you hear about China is just CIA propaganda. And the thing is, when you tell them about the other awful shit that they've done, like that time that they sided with Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge and tried to invade Vietnam. By the way, for those who don't know, I have some friends who live in Vietnam, both expats and natives. And some of them fucking have relatives who died because of that shit. And, yeah, it's just like, every so often he's just like, yeah, just ask the Vietnamese what they think of their Chinese neighbor. Especially when they try to poke their ass into the South China Sea. Just ask them about it. But, yeah, so... this is kind of reminding me of what happened, like at least, on the surface, like back when President Trump decided to put up those tariffs and the Chinese decided, oh, well, we're going to come back and we're going to pass sanctions on you as well. It's mostly theater.
Yeah,
it is. Our government and China's government pretend that they hate each other, but we are so intertwined corporate-wise that, yeah. But moving on from there. The city of Evanston, Illinois, is looking to be the first U.S. city who is going to be offering reparations for slavery for its African-American residents.
Yeah, this isn't necessarily like the monetary reparations you might be expecting.
No.
This is response to the harm caused by, quote, discriminatory housing policies and practices and inaction on the city's part. It's believed to be the first of its kind in the U.S., a potential thing that could set a standard for the future. Grant qualifying households up to $25,000 for down payments or home repairs.
Yeah.
According to the city. So it's stuff like that for people to improve their homes or pay for their homes, that kind of stuff.
This is more not slavery. This is more in line with all the shit like urban planning and redlining and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of fucking Robert Moses, that guy was basically Satan in human form.
Yeah. Yeah. As they say here, as part of the draft of the resolution, the program is a step towards revitalizing, preserving, and stabilizing Black/African-American owner-occupied homes in Evanston, increasing homeownership and building the wealth of Black/African-American residents, building intergenerational equity amongst Black African-American residents, and improving the retention rate of Black African-American homeowners in the city of Evanston.
Yep.
And yeah, that's where a lot of people get their wealth from, is in their home, their property, kind of stuff. And Black people have not gotten as many opportunities to do that kind of stuff. Especially in, parts of the country where, you know, gentrification creeps into areas and changes the values of the way those neighborhoods were valued at the point, or at that point. So yeah, housing is definitely a good place to start.
Yeah.
For these kinds of conversations. Yeah.
So I wonder if we're going to end up seeing something in like some of the bigger cities in Illinois, like Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see, I guess.
At least next it seems up. A lot easier to do in smaller cities.
Yeah, it's possible. Next up, this week, Virginia became the 23rd state to outlaw the death penalty, or essentially abolish the death penalty within its borders. So now close to half of the country has abolished the death penalty.
Yeah. Which is good, especially for a state that had been kind of purple for a while, now it's starting to become more blue and do some good stuff. For its people, because the death penalty is kind of a whole weird thing where a lot of people that get put through it oftentimes have not done the crimes they've been, you know, committed of.
Yeah, I believe the statistic is like 1 in 10 people who have been executed were in fact innocent.
Yeah, and the ways that they do the death penalty in various states is oftentimes very barbaric and haphazard. It's like, oh, finding drugs that can, you know, kill a person, but somehow without pain or whatever, is very hard and very expensive.
Yes.
To procure and make.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's very few options that actually work the way they want them to.
Yeah. As it turns out, keeping the death penalty is actually more expensive in the long run than just keeping a person in prison for life.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that sounds asinine on the surface, but look it up. It's totally true. And of course, there's...
Like if you're going to want to kill somebody, it's like the firing squad is kind of the easiest and cheapest option.
Yeah.
Because it's at least going to just require, you know, guns and ammo.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. Yeah, and finally, as for our heroes of the week, Rachel Levine was confirmed by the Senate, and she will be the first openly transgender federal official in American history.
Yeah. Yeah, she was confirmed for Assistant Secretary for Health in the Department of Health and Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
And 52 to 48, so pretty much party lines.
Yeah. All right. Nice work.
Yep.
Okay. So, all right. So, moving on from there, we're now going on to the proper show proper. And we start off with President Joseph Biden, who is looking at getting gun control efforts kickstarted by some executive orders. Or at least he's looking at options to do so.
Yeah.
Which be within his right, as you know, since it would essentially be, you know, for it would essentially apply to all federally held property, I guess.
Yeah,
and, I guess he could force
it's kind of a thing because we have two bills currently, in I think it's in the Senate, that are pushing for, you know, universal background checks and closing loopholes and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
That unless somebody from the Republican side decides to defect, it doesn't seem like they're going to get passed because of Joe Manchin.
Because, of course.
Because the NRA has pushed for a long time to not have universal background checks, anything like that, because making that easy would make it harder for, you know, stuff to actually get done.
Because
I think the CDC isn't even allowed to have like a digital database of this stuff. It's all kind of physical on tapes and papers, all that kind of stuff. That just seems very ass backwards for what you think this sort of stuff would be in, you know, the 2000s.
Yep.
And yeah, I saw the I've seen a lot of people talking about gun control and all that, and it's like, you know, what if they treated gun control the way that they treat voting rights? Like, oh, you can only buy guns on the fourth Tuesday of the month in this one particular location in the county. You just have to wait in line, and you're not allowed to give out drinks.
And you have to have ID on you.
Yeah. And you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, that's kind of how ridiculous it is for the voting stuff, just to compare it to what if you did that for gun control.
Mm-hmm.
What else? There was a video of one of the former SCOTUS members back in the, was it the early 90s or late 80s? I forget. Talking about how the way the Republicans use the Second Amendment is kind of one of the biggest cases of fraud in that he's ever seen, because they, when you look at it, it's about a well-regulated militia, you know,
Yeah.
It has regulation built in to the terms of it. Also, it's built around militias, not the average person to own guns.
Yeah.
Without regulation, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that guy was a conservative judge, and he even saw through the bullshit.
And I also need to point this out. The Second Amendment does not protect your right to manufacture or purchase a particular firearm.
Yeah.
So if they wanted to ban the manufacture and purchase of, AR-15s within the United States, they could totally do it. It would be perfectly constitutional, and there wouldn't be a goddamn thing they could do about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got to do something at some point, because just seeing this shit happen over and over again.
Yeah. Keep in mind, as far as like crime is concerned, the average person in New York is no more, is no more vulnerable to being mugged as a person who's walking, say, in London in the UK. But the person who is getting mugged in New York is also 50% more likely to end up dying in the event because of the presence of the gun.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, I'm saying this as a person who actually really likes guns and is a gun owner himself. But I'm also somebody who takes guns very seriously and takes gun safety very seriously. And if you are a responsible gun owner, you do not walk into a Walmart carrying 5 fucking guns on yourself.
Yeah. Seems like the numbers that people own is out of line at this point.
Yeah. I have 6. Okay, I have 6. I got a couple of hunting rifles that I inherited from my late grandfather. I have a Glock. I have a pump-action shotgun. I have a old musket that's like a antique. And I have a small Derringer. And I keep them all in a gun safe. Always keep that good and locked down. I keep the ammunition somewhere else. You know, we really should be treating this shit the same way we treat cars.
Yeah. Should have to get it all registered.
Yeah. Should have to
make sure it's
a written test. Should have to take both a written test and a physical test with an instructor by your side, you know, and you should have to take insurance on your gun.
And have to renew it every year, every couple years.
Yep.
You know, have to store it in a safe.
Yeah.
Of some kind. Because I think, what was it, Lauren Boebert, who happens to be the Colorado State, Colorado rep in the House for Boulder, Colorado.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think she was earlier that day making a joke that she moved all of her guns to the second floor of her house so that Biden couldn't come and take them because of the whole tripping on the stairs thing at Air Force.
Yeah.
To get on the Air Force One, which is like, one, you're stupid as fuck. Two, Biden's not actually going to come and take your guns. It's never how it's ever going to work.
No.
It's stupid fear-mongering.
Mm-hmm. And they know.
In front of people for tripping on things, it's like, fucking cares. It's such a stupid thing people are getting on about.
Well, it's because it's a sure vote getter. Like, they know for a fact it's bullshit, but
yeah, I mean, they also know it's for tripping on steps, like,
yeah,
such a non thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my god, he tripped on steps.
Well, man, it's because it's because he's also supposed to be too old, and like
he was trying to run up him pretty fast.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was pretty gusty too. Yeah. So, but
it's like, at least he didn't fucking walk onto the Air Force One with toilet paper stuck to his shoe.
Yeah, but let's see. Unfortunately, we do also have a celebrity death that happened this week. In fact, I think it happened like literally just yesterday. Rest in peace, Jessica Walter, who of course was a longtime actress who had been active since, I guess, the 1970s. Most people who know her today would know her as both as from Arrested Development and as the voice of Archer's mother in Archer.
Yeah, Lucille Bluth.
Yeah, yeah, she's been around. She had been around a long time.
Yeah, fantastic. Actor brought a lot to Arrested Development as the sort of the matriarch of the family. As had to deal with all of her husband's bullshit.
Yeah.
Lots of great bits she brought to that show, just through her own acting and the way she delivered the lines and all that.
Yeah. She's got that. She had that great like combination of both like waspy and like also, you know, wine mom type of deal, which considering her usually like on her third martini at any given time of day, it worked.
Yeah. The and her line in her stuff in Archer is similar. Of being the overbearing mom, also running the, you know, the apartment her son is at.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sad to see her go, but she left a hell of a legacy behind her.
Yeah.
Now, here's the question. What are they going to do with her character in Archer?
I don't know.
We'll find out. Yeah. They're good. The writers for that show are really good, so they'll figure out something that'll work.
Find a way anyway, for her to pass away and still fuck with Archer all the time.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from there, we got some vaccine news. After the positive results of the AstraZeneca U.S. trials this week, well, the U.S. says it's old data.
Yeah. This is a whole weird thing where they posted some pretty positive news about the results of the trials they've been doing for that vaccine here in the U.S. And people overseeing this stuff seem to be pretty concerned that the data they were presenting were kind of an incomplete version of it. Relied on like outdated information that's kind of seemed to muddy the waters for whatever reason, that they couldn't just be upfront about it. Because as long as it seems to do the job well enough, it'll be, you know, allowed to be used. Which, there's a lot of stuff going on in like Europe about this vaccine, because a small amount of people have had like blood clots, which doesn't necessarily mean that they caused it or anything, because it's, you know, millions of doses they've done over in Europe, and I guess like maybe like 20 people at most have had issues with it.
Yeah.
Seems like a sort of thing where if you're, you know, susceptible to that kind of stuff, probably try and get you a different vaccine, but most people will be perfectly fine with it.
So anyway, they went back and updated their report, and it now suggests 76% of efficacy against symptomatic COVID-19. So,
yeah, and 100% effective against severe critical disease and hospitalization.
Yeah.
Which is really good news.
Yeah.
Like I had said, 79% earlier this week. So slightly different, but still need to be 100% clear when trying to relay data about these vaccines.
All right. So progress is still being made. Next up for some really fucking good news. Dominion, you know, the people who are responsible for designing and making voting software. You may have heard of how they kind of became the villain du jour of the Trumpers right after the 2020 election. But then you started to notice that people started backing off, and the reason was because, for one thing, all these weird-ass accusations about them, you know, apparently supposedly being started by the late Hugo Chavez as a way to fuck with American elections was all bullshit, demonstrably yep. not true, and libelous to the extreme. And so Dominion finally decided to say, fuck it, we're going after all these people. So amongst other things now, they have finally filed suit against Fox News for $1.6 billion, with a B, dollars over the 2020 election fraud claims.
Yep, because they played a big part in that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, Fox isn't the only one. They also have done the same to Newsmax, and I think they also did to One American News as well. This is the reason why Lou Dobbs basically lost his show on Fox. Lou was like their sacrificial lamb, basically. But Dominion ain't fucking falling for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, this is just sweet.
Yep.
Mm. So we'll see how this goes. It seems like they have basically an open and shut case, so, you know, I don't know what shit Fox is going to try and pull to get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they might use the Tucker Carlson defense. But all that will do, they literally are in kind of a lose-lose situation, because if they end up losing the suit, where, well, they end up losing a big chunk of change and are basically going to have to do public restitution to Dominion, and even if they win, they're going to have to use the Tucker Carlson defense, which Dominion is going to milk the shit out of, and it will basically destroy whatever little bit of credibility Fox News has left. So, yeah, we'll see where this goes. Next story. So, right now, the Suez Canal is completely blocked.
Yep.
Why is it blocked? Because a enormous container ship, apparently, while it was moving around in the fucking canal, it decided to, you know how when you got the dudes in the building that are tracking the pathways of the ships, and you got the screens that show the lines on them of where they're going?
Yeah.
Well, apparently they want to amuse the people who were running those machines by basically using the tracing lines to draw a giant dick. Now they're wedged into the northern part of the Suez Canal. And it's causing them like over $40 million every day.
Yep. If you thought you were having a bad work week, it's nothing compared to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's kind of most striking is if you see the shots of the coastline where the ship is kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
The diggers they're using just look like little toy diggers.
And yeah,
very much. The same kind of size you might see at a construction site.
Yeah, they're basically just
the container ship is just gigantic. I think they said
yeah.
This one in particular is like as big as the Empire State Building, but sideways.
Yeah, container ships. Shipping container ships are enormous vessels.
Yeah.
Which is why I like to play around with them like that, because the bigger they are, the more, you know, the more at risk they are of running aground.
Yeah.
And look what happened.
Yep. And they say it might take weeks for this thing to get dug out and righted again. So a lot of ships, if you've seen like the tracking stuff, they show like hundreds of ships just hanging around both ends of this canal, waiting for hopefully something to happen. A lot of them just giving up and moving over to going, you know, around the Cape of the Southern Cape of Africa, just saying, fuck it, we're just going to go all the way fucking around instead of being able to take this one shortcut.
Yeah.
That is going to cause lots of delays for the various things that are being transported here.
Yeah. Did they say, like, what exactly is being, what things they're transporting?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
It's probably going to be something that's going to bite you in the ass this week. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Next up, Collegiate Sports. The NCAA has finally upgraded the women's basketball players' weight room After early complaints, including one particular now very viral piece of footage that one NCAA woman's player made showing the size of the men's weight room compared to the one that the women have, and then comparing it to all the fucking space they have in the building that is going unused.
Yeah. Yeah, because that image just has like a setup with some weights to, you know, lift. Not really that much, enough for like one or two people maybe.
Yeah.
And just a table with a bunch of yoga mats on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the most kind of, we had 5 minutes to set this up. Something like that. So they got rightly called out on this. Especially as like a potential Title IX violation of not offering the same kind of weight room, you know, equipment that the men have, which now they thankfully have a much better setup.
Yeah.
But yeah, initially lots of athletes got there and were rightly pissed because NCAA likes to talk about how, you know, the women's March Madness tournament means just as much to them as the men's, and it certainly didn't look like it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what kind of, you know, deadlines they were under, they had, you know, weeks leading up to this to get this whole thing set up because they were basically trying to do similar to what the NBA did over the summer in terms of setting up a kind of bubble for all the men's teams that were in the tournament and the women's teams that were in the tournament. To kind of minimize the external exposure to potentially like COVID and all that. Like the men's side had like one team that had to forfeit their first round game and were out of the tournament as a result. But otherwise, mostly everybody was just fine. But yeah, they finally got this whole thing situated.
Yeah.
And fixed.
Yeah. I'm hoping one day we will live to see the day when, you know, gender segregated sports are a thing of the past. But until then, yeah. You kind of need to keep on top of shit like this. But anyway. All right. So now we're going on to the not serious part of the show, the entertainment show. And first and foremost, Regal Cinemas will be reopening in the U.S. next month. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what day they have in mind. It's probably dependent on the theater, but looks like they might be opening April 2nd for Godzilla vs. Kong and Mortal Kombat on April 16th.
Yeah.
To give some fairly big movies out there for people to go.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that works out. I guess when they do reopen, they're probably only going to allow the individual theaters to be like at only like half capacity. And there's going to be like, you know, like everybody, like, you know, you can only be like, everybody's going to have the 6 foot rule, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
monitor, you know, as the movie's playing.
Yeah.
You know, like how they would try to monitor, you know, oh, you snuck in candy or drinks or whatever.
Yeah.
In the old days.
Yeah. Which I used to fucking do all the time. So that does not bode well.
Yeah. I stopped at a certain point. It's like, I don't want any reason to have to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just, you know, eat lunch or whatever beforehand.
Yeah.
Or do it after.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Save the food for other times.
Yeah. But do you sort of see this as sort of a sign that people are kind of at a point now where they're just sort of, we've sort of accepted the idea that we're over the crest and we're now at the other end of the tunnel, I guess.
Maybe.
Kind of.
Or the people running these theater chains are tired of not having them open.
Yeah, and they're...
As more people are getting their shots.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is true now that people, you know, the vaccines are out there, and like a good bunch of people have gotten them, and that number is growing.
Yeah.
You know, it also might just be the point where people have finally just gotten, you know, plague fatigue and are just finally at a point where it's like, fuck it. You know, yeah, could do that too. I don't know. We'll see how all this works out. Next up, ABC is officially working on a reboot of The Wonder Years, where Don Cheadle will be the narrator.
Yeah. They're kind of working on the pilot right now, but yeah, it seems going to be more, as the original show was kind of focused on, you know, the white family experience in like the 60s and 70s. It was going to focus on a black middle class family in Montgomery, Alabama in the late 60s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, that's a 180 from the original series with Fred Savage, but yeah, it could totally work.
Yeah, that one had a lot of stuff about, you know, Vietnam became a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Next up, there is now a standalone Transformers movie in the works at Paramount. Now, is this being independent of you-know-who?
The Bay Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is independent, being directed by Angel Manuel Soto,
mm-hmm.
who's also directing the Blue Beetle movie for DC.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of their first Latino hero.
Yeah.
So yeah, they are working on this as like a standalone thing. I don't know any of the real details, but yeah, just saying they have somebody signed on to write a script for it,
mm-hmm.
With the director lined up, and that's kind of about it at the moment. Mm-hmm. I guess they are working on another movie in the Bayverse, but it's not being directed by him. Being directed by Stephen Caple Jr. did Creed 2
mm-hmm.
For next June, so there will still be more of that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Next up, speaking of Paramount, Paramount Plus has added a bunch of classic Nickelodeon shows. So, yeah, let's see. What do we got here? Let's see. What are we going to have on here?
Yeah, they added stuff like Double Dare, Legends of the Hidden Temple, mm-hmm. Guts. Let's see. I think Nick Arcade's in this as well.
Salute they Your do. Shore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Can't do that on television.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the stuff has already been on there.
Because mm-hmm.
they just listed, put a tweet up with an image of a bunch of shows represented on it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of shitty way of just not putting up a list of what's new. They're just like, oh, here's everything.
Yeah.
Whatever, you figure it out.
Let's see. Rugrats, Doug.
Seems kind of the Paramount Plus strategy at this point. Is like, ah, you figure it out if you want it or not.
Let's see. Real Monsters. Are You Afraid of the Dark? Kenan and Kel. Oh, that's classic. All That, also a classic. Eureka's Castle. I remember Eureka's Castle. I used to watch that all the time when I was a little kid. You know who created that show?
Who?
R.L. Stine.
Okay.
Guy behind Goosebumps. Yep.
Yeah, that's certainly quite different.
Yeah. Yeah, so a bunch of good stuff there. We'll see how it goes. Definitely a lot of good classics in there. Next up, Sony has announced that they're working on a film version of Ghost of Tsushima with John Wick's director. And I'm like,
yeah, this is with Chad Stahelski.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I had two directors, essentially co-directors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one that is, I think, also working on. Wait, I think I forget what else he was working on. I thought they mentioned it here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I guess they don't have it written here. But I thought he was working on something else. But yeah, they got an interesting lineup of movies based on their games,
mm-hmm.
And shows, that kind of stuff, with the Last of Us show that's being worked on for HBO.
Yeah.
It has Pedro Pascal and the Chernobyl creator working on that.
Mm-hmm.
That looks. Oh, that seems like it's going to be really neat in the Uncharted movie.
I got the dude to do Chernobyl, the Chernobyl miniseries to work on, fucking on the last. But yeah, that if you watch Chernobyl, it's like, yeah, he can totally fucking pull this off.
Yeah, I think they've said it's the first season's largely going to be following the first game's story, but have some have a number of elements that are going to differ. At least in terms of, you know, like side stuff they do, places they visit and all that kind of stuff, and not necessarily just follow it 100%, which I think is the right approach.
Yeah.
Kind of just take the core and kind of move around in it as you feel like you can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And finally, last story for the night, we got our very first trailer for James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie. And it looks like everything that the first Suicide Squad movie and the second Suicide Squad movie should have been.
Yep, seems like it's essentially a follow-up.
Yeah, I was going to say, the second one is actually Birds of Prey, I forgot. But yes.
Oh yeah, it's following up to the first two.
Yeah,
but looks like it has a good director.
It's James Gunn. It
that is kind of, yeah. I've seen he's looked like he's doing good work with this.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the last one is kind of like, I guess it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have it. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah,
they got a bunch of interesting talent on this. Idris Elba, John Cena in there.
Yeah,
Jai Courtney, Peter Capaldi.
Oh yeah.
Even let's see, Michael Rooker, and kind of a surprise in there is like Pete Davidson, for whatever reason's in there. And King Shark.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, King Shark's
in there. Not Ron Funches's King Shark.
Nope.
That'd have been too weird.
No.
He's the one on the show, the animated show that they're doing.
Yeah. And
he's watched some clips there, like
he's also the King Shark. He's also going to be in the upcoming game from Rocksteady. So,
yeah,
I'm certain. This is kind of, as far as like comic book movies go, this is basically James Gunn's forte. You know, this weird thing of sort of otherwise obscure anti-hero type characters. You know, he pulled it off with Guardians of the Galaxy. He absolutely can pull it off with this.
And do a good job of taking a property that nobody really thinks can work and making it actually work.
Mm-hmm.
With a good bit of style to it.
Yep. And, So I think we got a show. Yeah, we got a show, folks. Yeah. All right, so I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it in for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, Archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, well, wait a few minutes, because as soon as a new one comes into existence, we almost automatically sign up for it. So, you know, we are inevitable. We're like Thanos. So with that, I'd like to thank Chris Logie for joining me today. Well, tonight. We hopefully will have a bigger crowd for you next week. And so for all of that, I'd say good night, sleep tight, and I'm going to go pump some antihistamines into my nose because this pollen is getting awful.